This week, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. If you've never listened before, just sit back and enjoy. If you're a returning listener, first of all, thank you and hang tight. Most of the normal elements are in this episode, except you're going to be hearing my voice like this, guiding you through the whole process. So sit back, relax, and let's dive in. Hello, my name is Adam Ganong. I am one of the hosts here at The Rules. Now, let's get philosophical for a second. Really dive in, get existential, and ask ourselves a question.
What is The Rules?
The Rules is a podcast in which Adam and I...
The voice you just heard is Philip Hall, my co-host. What he said was the tagline we usually do at the top of the episode. The full thing is, The Rules is a podcast in which Adam and I discuss, brainstorm, and write a story, which we then present in the episode. The story we write is based on a set of rules we must follow. After that, we read the rules for the episode, something like, you must write about a dragon, or you must start your story in the dark, or you must write a story without using the letter E. Side note, we've never done that last rule, but someone has. There's a book called Gadsby by Ernest Vincent Wright. It's incredible. Go check it out. After that, we brainstorm, write and read the stories, and then critique them. The critique is usually just us laughing at odd and outlandish twists that could have been added. So this week, I wanted to shake things up, break out of the mold, go rogue. So I suggested...
This week, I'm going to cobble an episode. I'm just going to kind of piece one together. How's that sound to you?
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Now for this, you need to write.
Okay.
All right. So have you ever had it where someone has told you a story... And it's been very relatable. You feel like they were wronged in some way, shape, or form. But then later that day or later in your life, you hear the other side of the story from another person. And the story you hear is completely different than the one you heard from the first perspective.
Yeah, totally. I've heard that before.
That's what we are going to do. So what we are going to do is
When I started getting the tape for this episode, the idea was, what would it be like to get a story from a second perspective? Which we accomplished, but not in the way I'd imagined. You'll see. I'd hoped that the second would change the story, give different characters different motives, twist the view. But it ended up the story Phil wrote wasn't about that. Which is fine, because that isn't the story that came out of this episode for me. The story that came out for me was about editing. For those of you who didn't just shut off the episode, thank you. Stick with me. Edits are a brutal process of writing. There's a common phrase, which is kill your darlings. I heard it from Stephen King the first time, and I imagined it as a literal piece of advice, like kill your characters, kill your darlings. But it's actually an old piece of advice that means you need to be willing to go through and kill that turn of phrase you thought was clever. Get rid of that simile, ditch that useless sentence fragment you thought was so artistic. It means you need to stand up and look at each of your darling pieces of writing, size them up, and decide who dies. Like I said, it's a brutal process. So how did I get there? Why is this episode about editing for me? Fair question. It started with something small. So did you think it was weird that Phil was attempting to answer a question about his own podcast at the top of the show? So the reason he's describing it there is because I asked him what the rules was. And the reason I asked is because the rules was originally...
I don't know.
No, that's okay. So the rules originally was a folder on my Google Drive
right, where
I practiced writing.
So the rules was originally a folder on my computer. I just wrote short flash fiction stories, some of them bad, some of them terrible. So the idea was, Phil would go through, pick a story out of this folder, and then write a different perspective of the same story. Now to set the scene, these are all stories I've written in a time constraint using story cubes, which are 9 dice with pictures instead of dots, and there are over 200 stories sitting there. So while Phil and I sat and looked through the stories, a lot of the stories we opened would be followed by...
I can't remember the secret door either.
Are you sure it's not a ripoff of a secret garden?
I can't remember what happens in secret garden.
There's this girl that's a gambler, and she's a wizard. Oh wait, that's your story.
Oh yeah, he is a gambler.
Who ripped off who?
Oh, that's interesting.
Is that the twist at the end?
I don't know. I don't know what this is.
Maybe at the end you were trying to be all Twilight Zone-y.
Kind of, yeah, because it says, but there was a man and a door and you, and I do hope you keep your mouth shut about all this.
So it was fun for both of us looking through these old stories. Some of them Phil had never seen before in his life, and some of them I felt like I'd never seen before in my life. And finally, we picked one.
What is the Genesis engine?
Oh, the Genesis engine. Where is it? There it is. I need to take a look at it pretty quick. It's two detective kinds of guys, and they're on a ship.
So I read through Genesis Engine. It was an old story. It was from right when I started practicing writing. It was clunky and long-winded. Some of the jokes were all right, but a lot of it was like...
Skin was bubbling and blackened, but slowly it started to heal. One of those perks of being an investigator.
Is that a real line?
Yep. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to sound so sarcastic. It's not the worst line.
So I went through, did my edits, and this is what came out. Are you sure that's a good idea? Rodney turned and looked at his partner. He grinned one of his signature big devilish grins. No, I'm not. But then again, when have I ever done something I thought was a good idea? Come over here and help me get this opened. Wallace frowned. He had that look Rodney recognized as apprehension, a look of, I don't know if I should report you or help you. The latter of the thoughts was dominant, and Wallace walked over. They were in a large airship that had crashed the night before. The good news? No deaths. The hook? No lives either. It had crashed just outside its destination, and when the authorities had arrived, there were no bodies. However, as they continued to investigate, it became apparent that everyone was gone. But where? That's when they called in guys like Rodney and Wallace, magical misdemeanor and other mystical events investigators. It was a dangerous job, but someone had to do it. Who knew when the next warlock was going to need to be hunted down, or werewolf detained for failing to meet its monthly check-in, or some hooligan shaken down for using unauthorized invisibility spells? Rodney, you know, we need to report back and get a full warrant and authorization of investigation. We can't just barge in here and tear things apart. A majority of this tech is probably under patent protection from the Council of Sorcery. Yeah, and three of these have crashed over the past year, and all of them have been crashes just like this. Everyone gone, and no explanation. Wallace frowned. I haven't heard any news about... Of course you haven't, you idiot! They don't talk about things like this in the news. This is top secret stuff. This company's hiding something. Just like Marana Inc. was hiding something. Hey, listen. It may have turned out they weren't actually helping with illegal vampire migration, but they were up to something. What about the St. Louis Candle Company? You mean the St. Louis Panhandle Demon Company? Yeah, I've still got time to catch them. Wallace sighed and took off his hat. He leaned against the wooden wall and fanned himself. Well, you're right almost as much as you're wrong, so I can't say much. Damn right. Rodney was now crouching and had a panel opened. He was messing with a series of tubes, wires, and gears. He had a light in his teeth he kept shining down at a schematic he'd found, and then tracing the wires in front of him. He mumbled the entire time, complaining that none of the stuff he was looking at made any sense.
Here's the thing that confuses me, he said,
barely audible due to the light. He spit it out and continued. I can't see where the wires are going. And I understand the normal aspect, but I don't understand how this ship is actually moving. So it's not normal levitation? No. Between the wood and the metal and the passengers, you would need at least 20 warlocks to get this thing moving faster than 20 miles an hour. This thing was slated at moving 1,000 miles an hour. Wallace walked over to his companion and looked over his shoulder at the schematics. Teleportation? No, impossible. They had space-time coolant, but they aren't actually injecting it around the ship. But they have some. Yeah, there, there, and there. The majority is around the main energy supply, though. Well, let's look at that. It took them a while to find the main energy supply, but when they did, they were impressed. It sat like a pillar in the center of the ship. They had to break no small amount of locks to get in. It gave off an odd aura. It radiated colors and constantly shifted and swirled. Why is it glowing like that? Wallace asked. Rodney looked at it and started to circle around. He scratched his chin and mumbled to himself. This couldn't be... I think it might... He opened one of the hatches. There was a loud sound at first, like a god sucking an entire plate of spaghetti. Then it was dark and light all at once. 1,000 flames ignited and disappeared.
Wallace, help! He was sucked in. Wallace bolted over and braced himself so he could look without being pulled in himself. The birth of the universe sprawled before him, and he saw his friend hanging on for dear life, his body being charred and burned in the explosions and swirling eddy of creation. He reached in, grasped his hand, and pulled him out. Rodney lay on the ground and coughed, most of his clothes burnt, his skin changing from black into a newborn pink. Healing. One of the perks of being an investigator. A Genesis engine. Those idiots made a Genesis engine. Using the energy of the creation of the universe to power something in the present. He coughed and a bit of blood came up. Wallace looked at the device in front of him. His head was spinning and he felt like his blood was freezing in his veins. So all those people... Yeah, they all got sucked into the birth of the universe. Kind of an ironic death, right? Wallace frowned at his companion. He did not appreciate the joke. And that's the story. It's a bit odd, but I think it has some charm to it. Editing this story was interesting for a few reasons. To fully explain it, we need to take a quick trip through space and time. We go back. It's 2007, and you're looking through the windows of Belial Regional High School. You creep. No, just kidding. You're a ghost or something. Not important. You look through the window. It's Mr. Ash's class. He gets up and introduces it as Remedial English. Remedial English for creative writing. Some kid picks up his binder, opens it. A Term 1 report card is visible. English has a 66. The name on the report card is Adam Ganong. See that one coming? Yeah? Okay, well, heavy-handed foreshadowing is typical of someone in Remedial English. So now, I liked English. I liked reading. I liked stories. But my writing was terrible. Terrible. Atrocious. The main reason? I never, ever, ever edited. I had a deep-rooted fear of having to look back, having to confront that what I put on the page wasn't good. So in my adult years, I finally decided to try and write. I wanted to finally take some of the stories that were in my head and put them on paper. I wrote for a while in that rules folder, and the stories started to pile up. And then one day, I finally took the dive. I opened one, and I started editing. It was fine. Not great. The important thing, though, is I discovered it's not so bad. It's almost good. I started learning. Let's use Genesis Engine as an example. Before I did my edit, the story was in slow motion. Everyone smiled slowly, turned slowly, spoke slowly. I don't know why, that's just how I wrote. Maybe to build up suspense? Also, whenever anyone turned, they turned their whole body, you know, as opposed to just a portion of it. Just from editing this, I could see all the terrible adverbs and redundant sentences that used to be so common in my writing, and then slowly died out. And I can say slowly there because it was a slow process. So let's pause from that and go to Phil. He has a story to write as well.
So this is what I'm imagining. So the ship is actually sectioned off by police. They have made a perimeter. They've done everything they need to do. And they wait for these magical misdemeanor and other mystical event investigators, which I'm definitely going to abbreviate. So those guys show up, Rodney and Wallace, right? At the same time, someone finds a way through the police barricade onto the ship, and they are scavengers. We'll say this person is a scavenger. They're alone. Maybe they are a solo person that has connections, right? So they're going around the ship, they're cloaked with invisibility, they're a thief, they're really good at their job, and they're looking around the ship for gold, for forgotten passports, and they are having a day, because everything was just left behind. Filled a sack, left, came back, filled another sack, left, came back, third trip, we'll say, but they hear Rodney and Wallace on board. And they could run away, but they want to check it out and see who it is, see who's spoiling their fun. They expect it's the police, but they're going to see what they can find. What they actually find is they come into the conversation right about the time, right? When he says, I haven't heard any news about it. Of course you haven't heard any, you idiot. That part. I think that's when they overlap. Then they see the Genesis engine and they see everything go down. Ah, oh, we can leave it in conflict. This person's already been there, done their looting, found the Genesis engine. And they're leading back a party of criminals onto the airship to retrieve the Genesis engine. Ooh.
For a while, we actually edited together in the same room. We read aloud and workshopped the story. This would have been great tape, but it was spontaneous, and we didn't think of recording till after. Sorry. Once we finished workshopping, Phil did a couple more passes, and we sat down.
All right, so what was it like writing this story?
This story was definitely one of my favorite that I've written outside of the rules sessions, our 15-minute, like, this felt like, I'll put it this way. Imagine doing a test in school at your desk versus doing homework. As far as homework goes, this was a lot of fun. It's one of the best homework sessions I've ever had for the rules. So I took this, I got to think it over. You and I did some brainstorming together. It was a fun time.
It was a fun time. It was a lot of fun editing.
Yeah, and I haven't edited in depth in a while, like actually tried editing, because in our 15-minute sprints, in those tests, you don't have time to, you know.
Yeah, there's not a lot of time to like sculpt and think about every line. It's just you fix the most basic errors and that's it, which I guess kind of shows.
Yeah, and it shows in that the story's a lot longer. This is 900 words.
Yeah, we both have pretty long stories. All right, well, I'm excited to hear you read this out loud. I already know the story, unfortunately, but this is going to be your guys' first time hearing it. So without further ado, here is Genesis Engine, Side 2, by Philip Hall.
Jillian walked down the corridor of the airship. She stepped with ease over a wooden beam that had snapped during the crash. The seven men following her lacked her stealth, but made up for it in brute force, pushing their way through the debris. Jillian rolled her eyes. The day before, the wreckage had been her treasure. She had spent the entire night ransacking the ship without so much as seeing a soul on board. As with all of the airship crashes that had been happening in the past few months, the city guard wouldn't dare step aboard without a permit from the Bureau of Magical Misdemeanor. The bulbous and balding man following Jillian had different ambitions. Stefan was one of the high elite, which on paper means he's a politician, but in reality, he's a thief. They're all lowlifes who simply focus on stealing power over trinkets. Jillian hated thieves, and barely accepted that she was technically one herself. She had tried to stand apart, only scavenging things she figured no one would miss, but sometimes the lines blur. Her style didn't set well with the high elite. She'd begun stealing when her family business went bankrupt 2 years ago. Her father's failing health had kept her busy in the store until finally it closed. Stealing was one of the only viable options she had, and she'd given herself a set of rules to avoid turning into just another good-for-nothing burglar. 1. Never steal anything that would be missed. 2. No one gets hurt. And 3. Never get caught. Every time she encountered Stefan, he challenged one of her rules, and she hated him for it. When Jillian found Stefan waiting on her front steps earlier that day, it was no surprise. He was there to ask her to break rule number 3. Never get caught. More specifically, to show him the way to the glowing engine she'd found aboard. She wanted to run, but the half-dozen high elite guard made her think twice. In the apartment, Stefan called it the Genesis Engine. Genesis Engine. She was repeating the name over and over again in her mind, trying to make sense of it. She'd mentioned it in passing to a couple of merchants. One of them must have ratted her out. "We're almost there," Jillian said. If she was arrested because of Stefan's greed, she planned to make him regret it. She shook her head and tried to focus. Stefan climbed over a fallen crate and struggled to keep his balance on the uneven floor. Stefan began saying, "Just keep moving," but Jillian shushed him. Voices echoed down the hallway. Just beyond them was the engine room, glowing dimly in the dark hallway. "A Genesis engine! Those idiots made a Genesis engine!" using the energy of the creation of a universe to power something in the present. A man coughed from the engine room. Jillian turned in annoyance as Stefan nudged her side. He nodded toward the room and made it apparent he had no intention of turning back now. Jillian continued creeping forward. "So all those people?" a second voice said. "Yeah, they all got sucked into the birth of the universe. Kind of an ironic death, right?" Jillian turned the corner to see two men lying beside the engine. She froze. Just behind was a portal to the depths of space. It was the Genesis engine. Even in the dim light, their uniforms were unmistakable. They were investigators. Stefan began to run towards the men. The investigators jumped up, and the taller one smiled widely and said, "Hey Wallace, we have company." The six high elite guards began backing the investigators into a corner. Jillian dodged Stefan, who made a weak attempt to grab her as she darted towards the engine, making sure to stay away from the swirling opening. She ran to the backside of the engine and yelled towards Stefan, "Stop, or I'll gut this thing." "You don't know what you're talking about, girl," Stefan spat back. Everyone in the room turned to look at Jillian. She gulped. "Wait a second. Are you guys from the St. Louis Panhandle Demon Company?" the taller investigator asked. "What? No, we're not," Stefan said. "Oh, okay, continue then," the investigator said. Jillian cleared her throat. "This casing is the only thing keeping the engine inside the ship." The investigators looked puzzled. Stefan and his guards looked worried. "You wouldn't," Stefan sneered. "Is that even how a Genesis engine works?" Stefan looked at the investigators. "Absolutely. You really shouldn't mess with the casing. It's likely to consume the entire universe, as we know it," the shorter investigator said. "You hear that, Mr. Hiley?" Jillian said. She raised a broken beam off the floor, above her head, and directed her attention to the engine. "You'll never be safe in this city again," Stefan said. "You'll never be safe in this country again. You're dead!" Stefan ran towards the door. "Come on, let's get out of here. Quick!" "Well, I'll be. I never thought we'd run into that racket. Next time we should bring some guards, eh, Wallace?" "Yeah, no kidding," Wallace said. Voices echoed from the corridor into the engine room. New voices. Official voices. Investigator voices. Rodney looked at Wallace and said, "Do you think..." "We're not even supposed to be in here, Rodney. I knew this was a bad idea. Hey, you, do you know how to get out of here? Somebody forgot to get a warrant." Wallace pointed a finger at Rodney, who grinned widely. "I know the way out of here, yeah. Are you guys gonna let me go after I help you?" "Absolutely, whatever you want," Wallace said. "I'm Rodney, and this here's Wallace." "I gathered that much. Let's get out of here." The trio ran out of the room and down the hallway. "Yeah, it's actually a really great job. Are you looking for work?" Rodney asked while running skillfully over the debris behind her. "Probably. I mean, the high elite aren't gonna let me work in the city. You heard what Stefan said." "We might be able to help you out, Jillian," Wallace said. Rodney ran up beside Jillian and looked at her skeptically. "Wait a second. Are you from the St. Louis Panhandling Demon Company?" "No." Rodney smiled and continued following Jillian. "Okay, just checking."
So that story was a lot of work. It's not a commentary on you. It could have used more work. That's just the nature of stories. Now, I know that seems like a mean line, but it's true. The story could have used more polish. A lot of stuff changed in edits.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to give you a hard time. But yeah, it feels a little incomplete. Let's say this were like a 5,000-word story and lightly polished with a touch of mahogany stain. I think it would be nice. Yeah, I definitely wanted to make Jillian, for example, a more developed character with more depth, and a personality would have been good. You know, she was fine, but she could have been so much better.
The first story Phil wrote and the story you just heard, same story. But if you listened to the first one, it would have been a totally different ride. Less jokes, less interesting. Editing is where the magic happens.
In our show, we have minimal time to edit, and frankly, it shows. We're lucky, though, our format lets us get away with that, but that's something we'll talk about later. I still fear edits. For example, this, everything I'm reading, I wrote this over the past few days and dreaded editing it. I thought about scrapping the episode. The fear is that I'd go back, read it, and realize it was bad. The key, though, and this is what I've learned over the past years, is to know when you go back and read it, it's going to be bad. Most of it. Some of it will be good. Keep those parts. But I learned to go in as a pessimist. Clip, trim, and delete. Kill your darlings. Make a smooth ride for the reader. When I write, I don't spin gold. I draw a blueprint, and the building comes later. I'm glad I started looking back, criticizing my adverb-saturated sentences and purple prose. I'm no J.R.R. Tolkien or J.K. Rowling or any other writer whose initials contain a J and last name an I and revolutionized a genre. But I'm better than that kid sitting in Mr. Ash's remedial English class, and I'm better than that guy who sat down and wrote Genesis Engine, and most importantly, I'm better than Phil.
No. I understand where your confidence is coming from. You've been writing longer than me. You're a pretty clever guy. But I'm going to catch you, Adam. This is how it's going to go down. You and me, let's see who's the better writer. Let's get someone in here to judge who is better. Let's take 5 stories, 5 prompts, write flash fiction as fast as we can, and just
you know what? I already have a stockpile of writing prompts from people on Twitter. I'm confident. I think I can do that.
You heard the man. Tune in next week for our finale episode. Me and Philip are going to face off, and we're going to be judged by a special third party. Let's see who's the better writer. That's all we have for this week. If you like the show, you can check us out on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcast fix from. Our website is www.therulespodcast.com. We tweet at The Rules Podcast. If you have any rules or prompts you'd like us to use, you can send them to us there. You can like us on Facebook, and most importantly, if you want, you can leave us a review on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps get our name out there and lets us just sleep a little bit better at night. Dave Kiney is our show strategist, assistant producer, and a good edit on a rough draft. The Rules is co-produced by myself and Philip Hall. All original art was done by Philip, and all audio sculpting was done by me. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next week.
After credits thing where Wallace pulls off a mask and he's a demon, or he like goes home and takes off his jacket and he has St. Louis Panhandle Demon Company.
That's great.
That'd be super funny. Or Thor finds his hammer.